This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking about purpose-driven businesses, companies that focus not just on making a profit, but also on giving back to society. It's a topic we've discussed previously on the show with guests like Davis Smith, who's the founder of Cotopaxi, and Purpose Portfolio's Sarah Joy Pond. Today's show takes a different look at purpose-driven businesses. Today, we explore whether purpose-driven practices can be taught in business schools to our next generation of business leaders. Our guests this morning are Rick Haskell. He is the Assistant Professor of Finance at Westminster College, as well as Francesco Scopello and Noel Johnson, who are students in Professor Haskell's Business 101 class. As the class name implies, this is an entry-level business class. What's different about Westminster's version of this class, though, is that it weaves in foundational purpose-driven frameworks from day one. Tune in this morning to hear whether purpose and commitment to giving back can be taught, and if so, what the students have learned from this experience. Professor Haskell, students, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Pleasure to be here, Doug. Thank you.
So, Rick, let's start with you. I mentioned the Business 101 class. I believe I've got that right.
That's right.
It's really the introductory business class at Westminster.
It is. It's the gateway course that anyone that wants to be in the business school must go to that class first.
Okay. And as such, why did the university, why did you decide that was a good place to start the foundation and start teaching purpose as students think about business?
Well, because we'd like that to be a foundational concept. I mean, accounting and marketing and communication and finances are all business elements, right? But we think about those as inputs, not outcomes. Outcome is that which we derive from these businesses, that which we produce, profits and such. And if we don't begin very early on with an understanding of our responsibility as to how to then distribute those profits, then we've missed a great opportunity. And our society reflects that today.
So I'm a fan of purpose-driven businesses,
sure.
But I understand I have peers that say, you know, business should be business, and outreach and doing community good should be done outside of business. In some ways, isn't that a value statement that the university is making?
Well, it is a value statement, and you wouldn't be alone locally or even nationally with thinking that the business of business is making money, because it is. But around the globe, we're a minority in this. The Western conceptualization of capitalism, and I'm proud to be a capitalist, isn't simply to support the benefit of the stakeholder, certainly, and not just the equity stakeholder. It goes much broader than that. If you go outside of the United States, you see the equity stakeholder, the debt stakeholder, the labor stakeholder, the consumer, the supplier stakeholder. You even see the stakeholders being served, being the municipalities and states, of course. So we're the only ones that have narrowed it down with this fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders. The rest of the world has a much broader, more holistic sense of this.
So take us behind the scenes, and I want to get to your class soon.
Sure.
Before I get there, I want to get to, I think a lot of business and the conversations we have on this show is about the decision-making. So as I mentioned, I think it is a value statement. It's one that I applaud.
Sure.
But not all business people do. How was that decision arrived at the university that in this required class you would teach that purpose is a part of business? I don't know, but I suspect you may or may not teach the concept of, like in Europe, where labor has much more say in the running
right.
of a business. That may or may not be as part of your class, but why was this piece so important that you guys stepped outside of the norm and said, we understand it's a value statement, and we're going to make that value statement?
Well, you have to understand, and you probably already do, that Westminster has a very active entrepreneurship program. In fact, it's a social entrepreneurship program. So we've gotten very involved in the difference between B Corps and C Corps, and you understand
B Corps being benefit corps.
A benefit corporation that has within its charter, if you will, the need to distribute some portion of revenues or profits to the benefit of society through nonprofits and such. So to answer your question specifically then, recognizing that we have that bent, if you will, already at Westminster, it was really just kind of a natural byproduct for myself and Dr. Elise Morton, who's the other designer of this course when we put it in place, to not only teach the concepts of how to make the money – and how to be very good at that, but then maybe what some of our responsibilities are in terms of sharing that with the society that let us make that money.
Yeah, no, it's a really important topic, and I would argue it also goes to the income inequality broader discussion
it does.
That we're seeing now. And timely in the news as we record this, it's 2 days after the Trump administration has announced their tax plans and lowering corporate profits, the tax on corporate profits from, I believe right now, it's 35%. It caps out to capping it at 15%.
Right.
So the timing of this is good, I think. So Noel, Francesca, you both are students, either have been in the class or are currently in the class. When you read the class description and saw that it was going to include purpose-driven concepts, was that a positive to you, or was there any hesitancy on your half?
No, absolutely not. I think I was really excited about that aspect of it, especially because it's something new and different that you don't really experience all the time.
To be honest with you, I did not know what to expect, especially because I'm from Italy. So I was like, what is this? Like, what's a purpose-driven, like, enterprise or anything? So it was really interesting. But, like, the first day of school, I understood what it was going to be, and I just fell in love with the class. So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting coming from Italy because mm-hmm. Italy has very strong labor laws.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Once you hire somebody, the company has a commitment to that employee for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. It's not here, particularly Utah, which is an at-will state. You can come in one morning and find out you don't have a job. That doesn't happen in
yeah,
Italy.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a huge benefit to having that safety net. There's also a cost to that.
Yeah.
Italy typically has higher unemployment than the U.S. does because people are cautious mm-hmm. about hiring. When you made the decision to come to the U.S., and I imagine you're a freshman because you were just in the mm-hmm. Business 101 class, but having been here in the United States now for a year, reflecting on Italy, you know, what do you think about it? It's kind of a cutthroat nature, or mm-hmm. the business climate here in Utah and in the U.S., versus mm-hmm. Europe. What are your observations on that?
I think especially like labor related stuff, I guess. In Italy it's very expensive and people are very cautious about it. Here it's much easier to like create a company, like create a firm, while in Italy and in Europe we have so many laws and people are very cautious about it and they tend not to invest in firms and businesses. So I guess here it's much easier and people are more excited to create something new, while in Europe it's absolutely not.
So your peers in Italy, probably not many of them are thinking of being entrepreneurs. You know, it's easy for us to look at the world through the lens of an American citizen, but the rest of the world's very different, particularly mm-hmm. when it comes to entrepreneurship.
Yeah, it is. It is very different. Like, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't even know what that was before I came here, because it's such a weird, different world that we do not experience back in Europe. So now I'm looking at the world with like a different lens, with a different eye, which I think it's super interesting, but it's completely new for me.
Yeah. So Westminster's got a great reputation. It's very well known here locally. How did you find out about Westminster being from Italy?
Well, first of all, I was an exchange student in Vancouver, Washington in 2014, and I just fell in love with the school system and the whole system because it's so different from what I was used to. And so after I went back to Italy, I took the TOEFL, which is an English exam, and then Westminster was one of the universities that contacted me after like having all the scores. And they just recruited me really hard. And I applied, got in, and I don't know, that's how it all started.
Well, good for them and good for you. And we're glad
you.
To have you on the show. So let's now go inside the classroom. So I talked about, you know, how did the decision to weave purpose into a business introductory course get made? Now, Professor Haskell, take us inside the classroom. How do you teach purpose to the students?
So this class is kind of unique in many ways. To begin with, it's actually two classes taught as a course, And there's a comm class, business communications class, and a quant class, business quant. And I teach the business quant side. And these are each 3-credit-hour courses. So this is a big part of the student's curriculum in their first semester or their first year. So between the students that are taking these two classes together, we teach the regular concepts that you would expect a business communications and a business quant class to teach. But what you wouldn't expect is that we actually form the students into business units. They create an accounting division, a human resources division, a finance, a marketing division, a sales and a product management division within this company. And they staff it with the students, and they select into these different divisions of their own choice, but they have to interview to get into them. And then they source products from various sources throughout the community of their choosing that they then turn around and sell at a price of their choosing within the Westminster community and beyond. So that's where we began, and we're really now talking about the applied elements of business, not just in the academic setting in the classroom, but they're doing these things now.
Right. So that's traditional business.
Traditional business.
Business teaching. What about weaving in the purpose?
And then we help them understand that all of the profits are going to go to support a nonprofit of their choosing. So every dime that's made by this, and this is a one semester experience, we're not talking about raising tens of thousands of dollars in profit in a semester, but all of the profit will go to support a nonprofit organization of their choosing. And so we then give them proposals that have been sent to us from nonprofits that we had requested as to projects that are going to include not only some financial benefit from us, but also some significant hours of service. So each semester, this class is culminated in the students going to the facility that has been chosen by them and participate in the project that was chosen by them. Last semester, they painted some rooms at the Road Home, the local homeless shelter. This semester, they chose to support Columbus Community Services. And interestingly enough, again, Columbus decided to have us paint some large facility for them. So they're putting in about 100 hours of service, 100, 120 hours of service over there painting these rooms. And then the money that they raised is designed to go ahead and provide all the supplies. Now, in both semesters, we were also very fortunate for Sherwin-Williams Paint to step forward and provide all the supplies. So we're able to then give the money either directly to the nonprofit, or in the case of the Road Home last year, since we were doing this in the fall semester, we went out and spent about another $1,000 on Christmas presents.
Yeah, you know, the Sherwin-Williams tie-in is interesting, and it was one of the things I tell young people about entrepreneurship is, you know, there's a lot of risk. I mean, I generally tell people you have an 80% chance of failing. Right. If you're a bright student in college and you've done well, there's probably no other path you can choose that has as high of a probability of failing as entrepreneurship. But the other side is you also can't tell day one what things are going to go in your favor, like right. a Sherwin-Williams stepping right. up and painting, or, you know, more for an entrepreneur, maybe being able to hire a key employee that's at the right point in their career where they can go a year without getting paid. And now all of a sudden things change. So yeah, you can identify the risk, but what you can't identify is some of the things that are going to go your way. And I find oftentimes that makes it easier to take that leap. Now let me get back to 100% of the profits going to a not-for-profit that the students choose. You know, I would argue that's not a purpose-driven business.
Okay.
A purpose-driven business shares some of their profits, but they have to make that difficult decision as to how much of it goes to the investors, how much of it goes to the executive team, how much goes to the rank and file. I think those are really interesting questions for students to explore. Why did you guys make the decision that it all goes to a not-for-profit?
Well, largely because we're dealing with a relatively limited number of students that create and form this business in a very limited time frame. I actually agree with you with respect to if we're really going to talk about purpose-driven enterprise.
Those are hard decisions. How much goes to each of these stakeholders?
Well, it's the conscious capitalism concept, right, that John Mackey of Whole Foods has championed so effectively. So you're right. We're not really exploring all of this, but we only have 4 months to do it. And so had we decided, well, some of this is going to go back to some stakeholders, which don't exist in this case. Some of this is going to go back to some to wages and such. There'd been very little left over to support a nonprofit. So we were dealing with some small dollar amounts to
Fair
begin
enough.
With, and we
Fair
didn't
enough.
Want to make them smaller.
Okay. Noelle, I'm curious. What were your thoughts on not just donating the profits. Oftentimes money is the easiest thing to give, but it sounds like you guys, as part of your class, had to donate a fair amount of your time to support this. In this case, painting the roadhouse, it sounds like, was your project. What were your thoughts on that experience?
Well, we're actually going today, later today, to go paint. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think that it's nice, though, to have, you know, time to fill, to do other things, and to feel like we're giving back to our community, especially as students. I know I'm from a small town that's outside of the city, and so this outreach really helps us to experience other parts of the city that we might not see every day, and to realize where our city can improve. And that kind of gives us, you know, outlook as maybe future entrepreneurs as to where we might want to improve our own communities in the future.
Thank you. If you're just joining us this morning, we're talking about purpose-driven businesses and whether its principles can be taught in the classroom. My guests are Rick Haskell. He is the Assistant Professor of Finance and Economics at Westminster College, along with two of his students, Noel Johnson and Francesca Scopello. So you mentioned the CEO of Whole Foods,
yes,
which is a classic example of a purpose-driven company. Do you use case examples of companies, and what are two or three companies that you highlight?
So not in this class, because we're dealing with such elementary business concepts in the class. I teach other finance courses at Westminster, and clearly I do. So you referenced Cotopaxi a few minutes ago, and they're clearly one of them. I talk about a couple of other businesses that no one would have heard of have been formed as B corporations. So they have it right in their charter that they're going to do
some big B corporations. I believe Patagonia
the first one. And was still one of the largest at this point. And the incidence of B corporation creation in our country is climbing dramatically. Now, it's a small number still, but it's a big proportional improvement. You have to ask the question, why would you have a B corporation instead of a C corporation? And the only answer is so that those people making the decisions to give the money to various nonprofits, etc., have some cover so that they don't end up getting sued by their shareholders. And that's the state of what we've come to in this country. So to answer your question, yes, we do use cases, not so much in this class, but in some of the others that I teach. And we have a very active social entrepreneurship program, as you're aware.
Okay. And Francesca, coming from Italy, you mentioned that entrepreneurship is not a very common concept there. Mm-hmm. You've been here a year now. What are your thoughts? Do you think you down the road want to be an entrepreneur? And if so, how important are some of these purpose principles to you?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I'm still a freshman, you know, have 3 more years and grad school and everything. Maybe, potentially. I don't know yet.
Well, like you said, you're a freshman, so
yeah,
you have
exactly.
plenty mm-hmm. of time. And I actually think, I don't know how Westminster does this. I've got two teenage daughters myself. And, you know, some schools make you come in and declare, you know, when you're a 17-year-old, you have to declare what your major is. And I have a daughter that turns 17 in 2 weeks, and she's wondering, how do I know what I want to do for the rest of my life? And the reality is you don't. Mm-hmm. How does Westminster do that?
We like our students to declare by the end of their first year, no later than the beginning of the second. Now, we'd like them to versus causing them to, two completely different things. I sometimes will have juniors come into my office to declare their major. So it's when they want to. And I agree, when we're even that young, even that inexperienced, hard to know where you're going, but you're never going to get there if you don't start someplace.
Yeah, even when you're 30. I mean, we may get back to this, Professor Haskell. You haven't always been Professor Haskell.
Not exactly.
You started off in my industry in the financial services business.
Right.
So we may get to that. But before we do, I mentioned before the interview that I see purpose-driven ethics and principles tied in with business ethics. Do you see those two tied? Or are they kind of completely different subjects, business ethics versus purpose?
Well, we tend to treat them separately in our economy and society. What we're really talking about is ethics. Business, individual, philanthropic, it's just ethics. And if part of your ethic is to recognize that you've been very fortunate and to then share some of that back with others, then you're going to naturally seek one of these opportunities. If that's not part of your ethic, then maybe you don't do that. Or maybe you can receive some influences that help you realize that maybe there's some value in it becoming part of your ethic. And that's what we're really doing, is we're just trying to open up the eyes, or our students' eyes, to see that there's some real satisfaction and utility that comes from this. And in many business cases anymore, it's good for the business. It's not just enjoyable for those making the decisions. Sometimes it's excellent for the business itself.
Well, in particular, if your business relies on recruiting talented young people, I think there's been a wave when Professor Haskell, you and I think are about the same age. When
being
we were
very
going
kind,
through,
by the way,
when you and I were starting off in business, there was really no focus on purpose. And now today, you know, I know my teenage daughters, they want both. You know, they want to have a successful maybe business career, maybe career outside of business. But it's very important to them that they work for a company that they see as making the world a better place.
Right.
What do you think drove that change? Why is it different for young people today than maybe it was 30 years ago when you and I were young people?
I think it's only marginally different. I think that as young people, each generation wants to have it all, right? It's just that as we have continued to see some things develop in our society, we've begun to realize that all maybe is something different today for us than it was 20 years ago or 40 years ago. You mentioned a few minutes ago some issues of income inequality. We do see this as an issue. In fact, more and more business makers and policymakers, or business leaders and policymakers, are seeing this as not just something to talk about, but a functional issue that is starting to curtail demand at the lower levels, such that it's making it harder and harder for our businesses to earn the profits that we'd like them to make. So if that's the case, we need to think about how we support these organizations that are bringing up those lower levels. So I don't know that it's all that different. We just didn't realize that it was part of the all that we wanted to have. And I think that's much more in front of us today. And for millennials, it is absolutely part of the all. They want to make an impact business-wise, and they want to have a rich personal life, and they want to do something good for somebody else.
Well, I applaud all of those. And, you know, I think, I graduated high school in the 80s. And up until that point, the income inequality was not as big of an issue. I mean, if you look at the numbers, it was really in the 80s that what we saw was companies doing very well, the top 10% of society doing very well. But most of the economic benefits and most of the economic gains, unfortunately, for the last 30 years, have really inured to those two groups. Right. And 90% of American employees have not benefited from the growth that we've seen in the U.S. So I think, unfortunately, we allowed things to get too far before the conversation clicked in, and it's definitely in place now. Well, we should probably take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Professor Rick Haskell and two of his students, Noel Johnson and Francesco Scopello.
You're listening to The Bottom Line on KCPW. For podcasts and more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Our topic today is purpose-driven businesses and whether its principles can be taught in the classroom. Joining me for this discussion is Rick Haskell, Assistant Professor of Finance at Westminster College, and two of his students in his class, Noel Johnson and Francesco Scopello. Again, thank all of you guys for joining us this morning. I'm curious, Noel and Francesca, as you before break, we're listening to Professor Haskell and I talk about this income inequality. As you know, that's one of the things that's playing out in the news right now. But as students, you often don't have a voice to communicate to the broader community in Salt Lake City and Utah. And this is a business show, so people that are interested in business are listening. What do you wish that business people in the state were thinking about or knew about that maybe they don't, that you'd like an opportunity to share? Or even the legislatures. We've had Governor Herbert's been a guest here. So, you know, politically, we've had several legislatures. From a young person's perspective, is there anything that you wish legislature or business leaders were aware of that maybe they're not as tuned into as they should be?
Well, I don't think that you can, like, force people to donate money or, like, get back to their community. But I definitely think that maybe it should be something that it's taught in school and in college, like a good ethical, work. And so, like, get back to your community, like, donate money. But I don't think you can force people to do that. So I don't think you could, like, legislate towards that, like, you know.
Well, you can. Plenty of states have.
Yeah.
How about you, Noelle? Any thoughts there?
I don't know. I guess I'm just a big proponent on, like, the whole minimum wage aspect and kind of giving back to your community that way. It seems a lot more efficient for business owners to just increase the wages to their employees so that those employees have a better quality of life from the get-go rather than, you know, having government programs support them in replacement of that. It's just a lot more of a direct line.
Well, I thank you for bringing that up. And, you know, the argument is always we can't afford it. And maybe we can't. I don't know. But it'd sure be nice to try an experiment. You know, let's try it. See what happens. Does it really have, you know, the fear is also not only can't we afford it, but firms like McDonald's and Starbucks that have a lot of money to invest in automation, they bring that forward. But I think it's worth experimenting. So that, I think that's a great point. Thanks for bringing that up. You know, Professor Haskell, one of the things I want to chat with you about, I mentioned to you, you used to be in the financial services business. That's still my business. I do this show as a way to give back to the business community. As a part-time journalist, one of the things I've really been very impressed with in the journalistic community is this very strong journalistic ethics. This line and this fiercely guarding being unbiased. I'm very impressed with it. And I do this show. I also do a similar show up in Park City. Same thing at the studio up there. And everybody has stories about either when they had to quit a job because they thought their ethics were, they were asked to do something that they thought crossed that journalistic line, or they have a close friend that had done that. So I see journalism as a profession that has this strong line on ethics. And I see the business community as having this fuzzy line, which I think is very dangerous. Any thoughts on that? Why business maybe doesn't have that strong line that I see in the radio studios?
Sure, and you see it within every business that's out there if we're being honest with ourselves and if those business owners are being honest with themselves. We have a conflict here. And sometimes we have to think about the profit motive versus the ethical motive. And sometimes we find ourselves in positions where I could eke out a little bit more profit if I was maybe a little less ethical. You know, that's a hard decision for some people to make. But I'm always reminded that few of us would ever be expected to go to our graves wishing we'd been less ethical. We always wish we'd been more. We wish we'd been more transparent, more honest, more generous. And it takes us a long time to get there. But the problem that we see is because of this conflict, this friction, if you will, between the profit motive and wanting to be that best ethical self.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the issues with ethics, too, and I think it's so important. I mentioned earlier we had Taylor Randall, who's the dean of the business school at the University of Utah, as a guest. And I asked him, you know, what are some focuses for the university where they're trying to differentiate themselves? Like Westminster, he would say entrepreneurship is one area that they're clearly investing in and focusing on. Another one, frankly, that surprised me was ethics. And so we talked about that and the importance for young people to pre-decide where that line is. Because if you're struggling with that ethical dilemma real time and you haven't pre-decided, boy, it's really easy to take that first step, which can easily become a slippery slope.
Well, look at our society. We glorify many elements in our society that are anything but ethical. We've even gotten to where we've decided that personal ethics for our elected offices, maybe aren't even necessary anymore. We just want them to have ethics and good judgment in that office. We don't care about what they do personally. This is not the America you and I grew up in. This is a huge departure. So for Taylor Randall, whom I have a lot of respect for, steps forward and says, we need to weave this back in. Somehow this element came out of the fabric of this part of our society. We need to weave this back in. He's absolutely right. And that's what we're trying to do. And in fact, we refer to these at Westminster as woven elements.
That's a good point. And unfortunately, this is all playing out real time at very high levels within our society. I want to switch gears here. I mentioned earlier you haven't always been Professor Haskell. You started off in financial services. But I'm interested, you know, I would say our average listener is probably middle age and is raising kids. And I wanted to save a couple minutes in today's show. Your dissertation was on talking about getting college credit for young people while they're in high school, mm-hmm. as well as a concept that's called early college high school.
Yes.
You know, when I was in high school, I graduated from a very small high school. I went to public school outside of Cleveland, Ohio. 110 students in my graduating class. Not a single AP class. I didn't even know what it was till I got to college, and some of my friends didn't have to take freshman calculus because they had AP calculus in high school. But kids, high school students today just are barraged with a ton of AP classes. Share a little bit about your studies. What did your dissertation show? Is this a good trend that we're seeing for society? Is this preparing young people for college, or has maybe the pendulum swung too far for getting that first 2 years of college taken care of while you're still in high school?
Well, I think this starts with we've relaxed our education expectations in this country decade after decade for quite a few of those for the last 50 and 60 years. So what we were expected to learn 50 years ago is very different than what we're expected to learn today. The excellence we were expected to have is very different than today to get a high school diploma. And that's problematic for our society. We see a skill set void within our lower skilled workers. So you have to think about it from this perspective. And so something had to come in and fill that gap. Our young people have not become less capable within those decades. In fact, if anything, I'd argue they become eminently more capable. So to think that the pendulum has gone too far yet, I don't think we're there. I don't think we're even far enough. My youngest daughter, was enrolled in Itineres Early College High School in West Jordan. And that's where I began to first think about this and be interested in this. And I saw that there was an opportunity for her to earn her associate's degree commensurate with earning her high school diploma. And as the dad that was helping with tuition, I mean, that was nothing but good news. So here I saw this, and then I began to take a look at it. The benefits to the student household, and to the state which supports education are extraordinary. In the 2010 high school graduation cohort in Utah alone, and we're a very small state population-wise, because of students participating in college credit courses while in high school, the households saved $23 million. And the state saved $8 million. And $8 million is not a big deal to big, larger states, but I'm pretty certain that a few weeks ago, $8 million was being argued about at the state capitol when we were in the legislative session.
It's a lot of money, particularly for a small state. Yes. So per family, that's meaningful. One other thing that I saw in your dissertation, and I think I read it correctly, but frankly, it surprised me.
There's two people that have read that now.
Now
there's two, sadly. You're the second.
Two-thirds of all kids enrolled in high school in the U.S. don't graduate? One-third do not graduate. Only two-thirds graduate?
Yeah, and this is a high school graduation cohort issue. So it's the way that most of us would think about students that graduate versus don't. Doesn't it stack up the same? This is kind of a federal definition of graduation with your cohort. So the number is not quite that egregious, but it is more like 17%. just don't graduate, period. And yes, nearly a third don't meet the high school graduation cohort definition.
Got it. So they may not have scored the test that the government wants to see as they're leaving high school.
Well, they didn't graduate with their cohort. They graduated later than, or maybe not at all.
Okay. And one of our last questions for our students here today, you know, so being the father of two high school girls, there's a ton of pressure on high school students today that I don't recall feeling that much pressure. So I'd like your thoughts on, Noelle, you went to school here in the U.S. Let's start with you. What's your thoughts? Did you go to school here in Utah, high school?
I did not. I went to Jackson Hole High School up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Okay. And what were your thoughts on the amount of pressure put on you as a student?
It was definitely really intense, for sure. A lot more than I expected, and actually a lot less than I experienced at college. But I think that education is a really big investment once you get to college, and you're investing so much in yourself and your knowledge that that extra effort and that extra time in high school does teach you to kind of appreciate learning on a different level, and it kind of gets you to be like a self-learner. You like, I don't know, at least for me, I experienced that once I had less of a workload, it made me kind of miss learning. And so now I do all my college work, but then on top of that, I am constantly, you know, listening to podcasts and reading books outside to explore my own interests and expand my knowledge that way.
I'm glad to hear that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. How about you, Francesca? You went to school, high school in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking to a lot of your classmates here about what the U.S. high school experience was like. What are your thoughts on that? How the pressure of going to high school in Italy?
So there's definitely a lot of pressure in Italy school-wise, and it was really hard for me because I don't work well under pressure at all. So when I came here for 6 months when I was an exchange student, it was a completely different world. Like, I did not feel that much pressure, and that's probably one of the reasons why I decided to come back for college. And now that I'm here in college, I think that we have way less pressure than what I was used to. And I just love learning now. I don't know if it's because I'm studying what I love or if it's because I have less pressure on me, but I just love it.
I'm really glad to hear both of you say that you love learning, because ultimately I think that's the job of our educational institutions. Is to build this desire to self-learn and to continuously learn. So we've got to wrap up. Professor Haskell, any last thoughts you want to share with us about purpose-driven businesses or your class?
Well, I have to come back to something that both Noelle and Francesca just said about not having as much pressure as they thought they might have. I love hearing that as your professor, and I promise I understand exactly how to change that. So thank you, and the rest of your classes will appreciate that as well. But beyond that, Doug, we have an opportunity, not an obligation perhaps, but an opportunity in our very rich country to make wise choices with our resources. And we have a heritage of having done so. Some of that heritage has been lost a little bit. And to reclaim that, I think, is an extraordinary opportunity for us. There's a utility and a richness that we receive that goes beyond spending money for ourselves, on ourselves, or to pass to our progeny. And that's to help others around us. It may not be our obligation, but it's clearly our right.
Well, that's a great note for us to end on. I know you guys are headed up to the Roadhouse to help make that a better place.
Or today's Columbus Community Services.
Columbus Community Services. Well, we thank you both for joining us. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Doug. It's been a pleasure.
Our guests today have been Professor Haskell. He teaches at Westminster College, as well as two students from his class, Noelle Johnson and Francesco Scopella. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you, Ross. You can hear our entire conversation on our website, kcpw.org, or the Bottom Line podcast. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.